Welcome back to The Aware Show. I am Lisa Garr, and we have a new mantra here at KPFK. It is more content, less fun drives. And so our goal is to shorten the fun drives, give you more of the groundbreaking and wonderful analysis that we have here and the commentary which first was brought to you here at KPFK. So please consider donating now so that we can shorten these fun drives. And you can go to kpfk.org. And let's just do this before the winter fun drive on February 5th so that we can actually shorten that fun drive. And also, if you want to become a sustainer and become a monthly donor, this helps even more. You can do this at $15 a month or $25 or $50, whatever you do. I mean, you do Netflix at $14, right? You can do KPFK at $15 because you know what you put in is exactly what you get out. And it is a listener-sponsored radio station. So please go to kpfk.org or call us at 818-985-2711 for more details if you want to just give us a call. And we can continue to give you this amazing programming and the non-fun drive programming, which is just why you're here. And fun drive programming is good too, but the non-fun drive programming is fantastic, which is what we're doing right now. We're talking about diabetes. What is the difference between type 1 and type 2 diabetes? Do you know if you have the precursors for diabetes? There are so many different types of education around this that may have good information, might be too confusing. And we have someone joining us today who's a naturopathic doctor and a type 1 diabetes specialist. She is a certified diabetes educator. Dr. Jody Stanislaw is joining us. Welcome to the show. Thank you for being here. Dr. Jody.
Thank you for having me on, Lisa. It's an honor to be here.
Absolutely. So tell us, what is the difference between type 1 and type 2 diabetes?
I am happy to answer that because people get baffled by that, but it's very clear. Type 1 is actually an autoimmune disease. The immune system, for some unknown reason, attacks the cells in the body that make insulin. This happened to me when I was 7, and I got really sick overnight. I was so thirsty. I cried. I lost tons of weight. I was nauseous. I had no energy, and basically I was taken to the doctor a few days later, and my urine was full of sugar, and my blood sugar level was through the roof, and I'm immediately diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. I've been on insulin injections every day since. So this is the classic kind of what used to be called juvenile diabetes. Now, unfortunately, over 50% of people with autoimmune diabetes are over the age of 30. All autoimmune diseases are on the rise these days.
Yes.
Definitely environmental triggers going on
yes.
with that.
Yes.
And when you're adult onset autoimmune diabetes, the symptoms, unfortunately, aren't always as clear. But in type 2, which is what the millions and millions of people have, 95% of the people that are labeled diabetic are actually type 2. So I'm in a very, you know, small minority of what diabetes, you know, is out there. Type 2 is, there's no autoimmune reaction going on. It's literally the system is wearing out. The body's ability to make enough insulin is wearing out. The cells throughout the body are basically sick and tired of bringing glucose in. And so they're just kind of saying, you know, I'm too tired to bring any glucose inside, so I'm going to just ignore the fact that there's so much blood sugar in the blood. And so there's two pathologies in a type 2. Their cells are tired of bringing in glucose, and the body's tired of making insulin. And insulin is the pickup truck that picks up glucose out of the blood and feeds it to the cells. So if you don't have enough insulin, your blood sugar level goes high. So that can, if the person gets healthier and eats healthier and loses weight and exercises and has a more efficient machine, they can, quote, reverse and get rid of their diabetes.
Okay, well, let's just, I'm going to ask you really quick again. The insulin, you said, is the pickup truck that brings the sugar into the cells of the body.
Mm-hmm.
And then what does it do there? It gives you energy, stays in the bloodstream, and then that's why your blood sugar goes so high, right?
Yeah, if you don't have insulin, the sugar level goes horrifically high, and that's very damaging to the body. Too much sugar in the bloodstream, literally think of it as like glass, like little bits of glass circling. Mm. It rips apart the inside of the arteries. It causes blindness, kidney failure, strokes, gangrene, Alzheimer's. Too much sugar in the blood is incredibly damaging to the body.
Ah, and then the sugar level you can monitor with just a little pinprick, but it's over a certain level. Is it over 100? What is a normal blood sugar level?
Yeah, great question. 80 to 120 in a fasting state below 95. But otherwise, you might pop up to 130, 140 if you ate a really high-carb meal for, let's say, 30 minutes or so. But a healthy blood sugar level, which should always be between 80 and 120 and below 95 when fasting.
So now in type 1, which is prevalent in children, in youth, but let's talk about some of the myths. Does eating a lot of sugar give you type 1 diabetes?
No, not at all.
Okay.
No. Autoimmune diseases are believed to have a genetic predisposition or genetic risk, and you can get, you can get tested if you're at high genetic risk. Like my siblings, for example, anybody that has a sibling with type 1, generally the siblings are checked to see if they're at high risk. But then there's a lot of environmental theories like low vitamin D or having a viral infection. 30% of type 1s have had a severe viral infection 3 months prior to diagnosis. So there's a lot of triggers of, problems with the gut, the microbiome, food allergies, introducing milk at an early age. All these are theories as to what triggers the immune system to attack and kill the insulin-producing cells.
Gotcha.
We haven't figured out how to get my insulin cells to grow back. Doesn't matter. I'm super fit. I love to exercise. I'm thin. I eat well. And we can't figure out how to make my insulin cells grow back. So I've been on daily insulin injections for, 40 years.
And you have a way to eat in other ways, and we're going to talk about that in a second, in order to kind of curb the effects of type 1. But first, I want to keep going after the myths. Do you grow out of type 1 diabetes?
No, there's no way to grow out of type 1 diabetes.
Okay.
I mean, you can't grow back an arm, right? If you lose the cells, we haven't figured out a way to bring them back yet.
Okay.
Now, in adult onset, there are things I can help patients with to preserve the few insulin-producing cells they have left. Just because you're diagnosed doesn't mean 100% of your cells are gone. You generally have a certain percentage of your cells that are left. And I always want people to reach out to me because it's not spoken about in conventional medicine, but there are ways that you can preserve a certain percentage of your beta cells. They're called beta cells that make insulin during the pancreas.
Okay. And then the other question or myth is, if you eat too much sugar, are you going to get type 2 diabetes or type 1 diabetes?
So too much sugar is not related to type 1. Like I said, it's the gene, it's sensory environmental triggers, it's genetics making the immune system confused and attack the cells that make insulin. Type 2 is very much related to diet and lifestyle. Absolutely.
Okay.
Type 2 is a worn-out system, and if you eat a horrible diet, you are wearing out your system. Your body is going to get sick and tired of making insulin, and it's going to get worn out. I mean, that's a very simplified definition, but
gotcha.
Yes, diet and lifestyle contribute to type 2, because type 2 is just, it's worn out. I mean, sometimes it frustrates me that it's called a disease. For the majority, there's so much diet and lifestyle, it's kind of like, well, if you play tennis, you might get tennis elbow, but tennis elbow isn't a disease. It's a result of playing a lot of tennis. Like if you wear out your body's ability to balance blood sugar level, it's because you've overworked that system.
Interesting. But type 1, so it's autoimmune, environmental related. So can you tell us why, first of all, you're so passionate about helping people with type 1 and how you do help people with type 1 diabetes?
Yes. I have dedicated my whole life to helping my fellow type 1s. I've created a virtual practice, so I have patients all over the world. I have a website that can sign up. Anybody can sign up for a free intro call with me. And the reality is the majority of doctors out there just don't have the knowledge that's needed to allow their type 1 diabetics to be in really good control. Less than 25% of type 1s actually have healthy blood sugar levels, and that's actually being generous. The large majority of type 1s, their blood sugar levels are 200 and above. They're going blind, they're having kidney failure, they're losing toes, they're having heart attacks because they are not being given the education that they need. Their doctors either are unaware of what is necessary. Maybe the doctors never got the training in the first place, or maybe they happen to be a rare doctor who has had the training, but they don't have the time. You know, it's a very labor-intensive educational process to really get all the details you need. So that's why I've created virtual consulting. I've talked to some patients, you know, in 1 hour and changed their life. They told me, you know, I had this patient recently that had diabetes for 40 years, and she goes, the 1 hour with you is the most life-changing hour I've ever had. But then other patients I talk to, you know, for 30 minutes every week for months, and their lives just transform. And I know firsthand. I mean, I've had this. I know what's missing because I saw it myself.
Give us an idea of what's missing. And we can also take calls during the show, and you can help people as well.
Oh, great.
Joining me, it's a naturopathic doctor and certified diabetes educator, Dr. Jody Stanislaw. And by the way, if you can go to her website, which is drjodynd.com for the free consultations, which we were talking about, which she was just talking about earlier. That's drjodynd.com. But what are some of the ways that people can, in simple techniques that people can do to change their life?
Sure. Absolutely. And just FYI, the last two letters are N as in Nancy and D as in David,
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, a lot of people make that mistake.
Okay.
Well, the first thing is, if you can believe this, the standard, you know, advice given to newly diagnosed type 1 diabetics is that they can eat anything they want and just take more insulin. Have pizza, take more insulin. Mm-hmm. Eat ice cream, take more insulin. You know, have a bowl of cereal and bagels, take more insulin. And that just is heartbreaking to me. They even teach that at diabetes camps. I see the kids at diabetes camps that I volunteer at, and they're feeding them like, oh. And I get where they're coming from. Eating disorders, it's a very high rate of eating disorders in type 1 diabetics, especially teens. Because when I grew up, it was incredibly strict. I wrote down everything. I couldn't eat this. I couldn't eat that. I had to measure this. I had to weigh that. But now the pendulum has swung, and it's like, hey, we don't want our kids to feel like they've got a disease. So, you know, we want them to eat anything they want. But the reality is, you know, anybody eating anything they want these days is not healthy. So, and the reality is the injected insulin is really hard to dose correctly. I have to know how much insulin I need and the exact perfect timing of how much insulin to give. If I'm going to eat, you know, pizza and ice cream, I mean, you can't, it's kind of like gambling or, you know, with $1 million, there's a lot of margin of error there. So I first empower patients to be like, look, if you want to have healthy blood sugar levels, if you eat whole food, low carb, you're going to have 10 times easier of a time. You know, don't have oatmeal for breakfast, have chia seed pudding. Don't have a sandwich and French fries for lunch, have an open-faced sandwich with one piece of bread and a salad. You know, don't have pasta for dinner, have zucchini noodles. So I have a whole bunch of recipes, and I just empower them to be like, look, and don't even make it about diabetes. Make it like this is healthier eating. But that's, and that alone, people are like, oh, I never thought about that. You know, I never thought that my life would be easier if I stopped eating bagels.
Yes. And it's not part of the education of type 1 diabetes. It's just the education is take insulin.
Take insulin. Learn how to count your carbs and take insulin. Yeah. No, eating low carb is like some sort of periphery, alternative, weird, you know, debated advice.
How has this diet changed your level of insulin that you had to take?
Oh, dramatically lower. Absolutely dramatically lower. Because if I ate oatmeal and a glass of orange juice for breakfast, mm-hmm. I would need probably 10 units of insulin. And when I eat chia seed pudding for breakfast, I need 1.5 units of insulin.
Ah, so then you're lowering that need for that hormone. Is insulin a hormone? No.
Yes.
Yeah, it is a hormone.
It is a hormone. Yep.
To bring,
mm-hmm.
It's a truck that brings sugar into the cell. A hormonal truck.
Exactly.
I mean, I have, my dad is type 2 diabetes, and I've watched him manage the blood sugar levels forever and inject mm-hmm. the insulin, and he happens to be a doctor, so he knows what he's doing. And I look at that and go, how do you possibly do this if you're not experienced in the medical world? And I can see how people really could mess it up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, insulin is also deadly. I've had a patient die on me about 7 years ago. You know, if you give too much insulin, you can have a seizure and you can literally die. From a, you know, hypoglycemic event, because you're running out of fuel. You take out the pickup truck picks up so much glucose out of the blood that now you don't have enough glucose in your bloodstream for your brain to function. You go into brain damage, you seizure, you coma, and you can die. So it is a very dangerous hormone if not used properly, which is another reason why lower carb is smarter. Because, like I said, figuring out how much insulin you actually need for a meal to keep your blood sugar level in that perfect sweet spot. You know, if I'm eating chia pudding, I'm like, yeah, I probably need a unit, maybe a unit and a half. You know, I can't really go wrong. But if I'm eating oatmeal and orange juice and I give myself 10 units, what if I actually only needed 5? You know, like, that's a huge risk. I could go super high with all that carb, which is bad for me. And I also could go super low because I'm taking such a huge dose of insulin. So I teach what's called the law of small numbers. It's like small inputs, small margins of error, better blood sugar level control.
That's good. Now, what are some foods that have high levels of carbs that we might not know? I mean, pasta and cookies, of course, we know those are high levels of carbs. So what foods have high levels of carbs?
Well, it's the first thing I go to is things that people think are healthy, you know, like yogurt and granola. That could be tons of carbs. There's so much sugar in granola. Granola comes from grains, and then a lot of yogurts have added sugar in them. So that's one.
Okay.
A lot of soups actually have, you know, especially at Asian food. Like, I went to an Asian food place the other day and had a vegetable soup because I didn't want any of the noodles, and my blood sugar level shot up to 250.
Why?
Because they actually put sugar in their broths.
Oh, okay.
It was, you know, it's, yeah. So I try to avoid. They also put sugar in sushi rice. I mean, rice itself is hard, but anytime I've eaten sushi, my blood sugar level has just tripled, and I've recently learned they actually put rice vinegar and sugar into the rice. So,
to make it sticky. Yes.
Yeah.
And addicting.
But addicting. A lot of those energy bars, you know, they're promoted as healthy, but they've got, you know, something like 50, 60 grams of carb in them. A lot of fruit smoothies. Like, I would never go to one of those smoothie stores and get, you know, a banana, mango, whatever, because that has way too much sugar in it. If I make a smoothie, I put blueberries in it because blueberries are very low glycemic, low sugar fruits. And then I put a lot of protein powder and green powders and lemon and ginger and things like that.
What type of protein powder do you use if dairy inflames autoimmunity?
There's hemp, pumpkin seed. Some people can manage whey. I run food allergy tests on my patients to see if they're you know, having an inflammatory reaction to whey or not.
That's great. Now, you do all this virtually?
I do, yeah. I can mail a food allergy kit to anybody. You poke your finger, you put a bunch of blood on a card, you mail it to the lab, and then the lab emails me the results. I don't write the prescription, and I don't order the labs because I don't, you know, I work as a virtual consultant, so I'm not officially anybody's doctor. I'm just a consultant, and people pay me for my advice. But writing a prescription and ordering a lab is something that has to be done by your prescribing physician, and that is not me.
Right. Okay.
So a lot of my patients have a general doctor, and, you know, they just write their scripts and trusts that they're
they're
working with me.
Yeah, they have another. So you have an academy. You have a type 1 diabetes online academy. What is that?
It is. We have 2 live calls every month, which I've been doing for over 3 years.
Cool.
And the topics are anything from, you know, what are you eating from breakfast to how are you dealing with the stress of diabetes to, you know, how to manage your blood sugar to just, you know, are you full of gratitude today and what can we do to help you be more full of gratitude? I'm, as a holistic doctor, I'm always looking at the emotional health of my patients as well. So I love to talk about things beyond diabetes. So we have 2 live calls a month, but I also have, as soon as you sign up, you get access to all of my online courses, which are absolutely life-changing. I've taken all of the wisdom that I've given to patients one-on-one for the past 5 years, and last year I basically took 6 months to create a series of videos that captures all of my training, how to dose, what to eat, how to exercise and manage your blood sugar level, how to avoid burnout, how to get off the blood sugar roller coaster. Everything that I feel like a type 1 needs is in my set of courses. So as soon as they sign up for the Academy, they get access to all of my courses. They immediately get a welcome email from me. Sometimes if my schedule allows, I'll call them to give them a personal welcome call, and then they're invited to the 2 live calls a month, which has created an amazing community, which is really important for anybody with a chronic disease, is to have community with other people that really get it.
We were just talking about
and then
that.
I also,
mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, it's so important. Because you can have a spouse or a friend that just loves you to pieces and supports you, but they still don't get it. They still don't live it, right? So having your, you know, so I've created such an amazing community that we decided to meet. Everybody wanted to meet each other. So I do an annual retreat in Sun Valley, Idaho every June as well, which is coming up. So anybody that wants to be super inspired, it's a 3-day retreat where we go hiking and we make healthy food and it's great.
That is good to know. Now, are there other, can you offer some, and that's, by the way, a wonderful idea to have a whole supportive community around people with the same type of set of circumstances to, A, not feel like they're alone, and to get some really, really great advice. Good. Can you share with us some great, delicious recipe ideas for people with diabetes? It's always, I'm sure, a popular question.
Absolutely. I have a whole handout in my Academy on all the different chia pudding recipes that I make, which I just absolutely love. It's my favorite way to travel, too. Anytime I travel, I bring a bag of chia pudding and then some unsweetened cocoa powder and stevia. And all you need is hot water. And you mix, you know, put a little peanut butter in there, put a little coconut oil in there. You can also make it like, you know, blueberries and coconut flakes and soak your chia in coconut milk instead of hot water if you want a cold summer version. So chia pudding, there's like 100 different ways to make it, and it's so easy to, you know, to take traveling because all you need is hot water.
I was going
to
ask, is it high enough in protein? Does it have protein?
Oh yeah. Chia seeds are very high fiber, very high protein,
nice.
Very low carb. Yeah, they're an absolute superfood that doesn't raise blood sugar barely at all.
Good to know. Gotcha.
Yeah, they're great. One of my favorite, so dinners, I'm actually having a little, I love these recipes so much, I make them for my friends. I'm having a party this Friday, and I'm making what I call eggplant nachos. You slice up a bunch of eggplants, grill them or bake them for about, you know, half hour, 45 minutes, till they're just a little brown. You want them thick. And then I saute onions, red peppers, black beans. Take out the eggplant out of the baking pan, pour the onion, red pepper, black bean mixture on top, put a bunch of shredded cheese on top, put it back in the oven, melt it, pull it out. Now you have nachos, but instead of chips, it's on eggplant. And then, of course, I serve it with salsa and guacamole. Super
wow.
easy.
Wow. You could do that with
so
probably any other type of squash. That would be interesting. Yeah, that's great. Now, someone was calling in about oatmeal. We've got mm-hmm. Sharon in Canoga Park. And we've got, I'm just going to go to our callers here. Hi, Sharon. How are you?
Oh, hi. I'm good. Thank you so much. Let me see. Yeah, I thought oatmeal was healthy, and I recently bought some gluten-free oatmeal, and it didn't taste very good. Okay. But I buy, like, organic oatmeal from Whole Foods or Sprouts, and I thought it was low glycemic, so I thought it was okay. Is that not okay?
Well, oatmeal can range quite a bit in its glycemic load. It depends. Like, if you get, like, Quaker Quick Oats, those little, like, individual
No. I don't buy the Quick. Like I said, I buy the bulk from Sprouts or Whole Foods, the organic only.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Well, if it's organic or not, it's not going to affect blood sugar. But if it's steel cut, that's the lowest glycemic. But we're still talking about, a very high carb food. A steel cut oat will raise your blood sugar level a little bit slower than regular oat flakes. But if you're worried about blood sugar, oatmeal is not the greatest thing.
Hmm.
So just because something raises your blood sugar,
mm-hmm.
it's different than healthy or not. Like, for example, ice cream raises my blood sugar level slower than a pineapple. So I'm not really talking about healthy food or not. We're only talking about what raises your blood sugar. Now, do you have blood sugar problems yourself?
No, I don't. My whole thing, I'm actually, you know, older than I look. I'm actually 70, but I, you know, look 20 years younger and all that. But I have hypothyroid, so and I've had issues and all that. So I've got a lot of ailments and stuff. But
autoimmune, yes. Well, maybe we could talk about the carb conversation. Thank you so much for your call, Sharon.
Yeah, also about brown rice, because you said rice. Now, I have brown rice. Is that okay?
All rice raises blood sugar, but if you're not worried about your blood sugar, I'm not that, I mean, I don't really know you, but I'm only talking about what foods raise blood sugar, and if you have blood sugar issues, rice and oatmeal are not necessarily something that should be in your everyday diet.
Okay.
Now, at the last blood count, it was like 84 was my fasting blood sugar.
You're good.
Yeah, great.
That's good. All right, well, thank you for your call, and you actually, you know, spurred on a question here. Is, now, if you could explain the relationship between high carb and high blood sugar. How do the carbs process into sugar in the body?
Yeah, great question. Well, there's something called the glycemic index, which rates foods on how quickly they raise the blood sugar level. So, for example, I always make this analogy to my patients all the time because people just think, oh, how many carbs are in it? I'm like, well, you have to think beyond how many carbs. You can have 15 grams of black beans and you can have 15 grams of orange juice. And those black beans have so much protein and fiber in them, and the carbohydrate molecule is very complex. It's not a simple carb, if you remember that from, you know, your biochemistry class. You want low glycemic carbs. You don't want high glycemic carbs if you're worried about blood sugar. Because as soon as your food is chewed and then digested, the more complex the carbohydrate molecule, just the longer it takes to break that down into glucose. Glucose is a, you know, a single... I can't remember the term of it, but, you know, there's different complexities of how, of the molecule, how many bonds it has with other molecules. And glucose is, you know, the most simple monosaccharide as well as fructose, right? But black beans are very low glycemic, lentils, garbanzo beans, that's very low glycemic. So those are better carbs than white rice, for example. You can eat 45 grams of black beans, and your blood sugar level won't spike as high if you eat 45 grams of white rice. So it's not just total carbs. It's, you want low glycemic carbs.
And
so the more complex the carb.
Okay, so what about potatoes? Yeah. All potatoes, sweet versus white?
Interestingly, well, all potatoes raise your blood sugar level quite quickly. But interestingly, they're a very simple carb. Ironically, sweet potatoes have a lower glycemic index than white potatoes. So white potatoes actually are given out at marathons. You know, they're at little, the snack, the water stations for marathon runners, because you can have a bite of a cooked potato and your blood sugar level raises immediately.
What's the difference between sweet potatoes, yams, and Japanese yams?
They're all going to have about the same glycemic index. I don't know what the number is off the top of my head.
But, oh, good. So they're all in the low glycemic patterns?
No, no. They're lower than white potatoes. Ironically, but I wouldn't put them in the low. I'd have to look that up right now. I don't know what exactly their number is.
Ah,
anything below 55.
What about what about butternut squashes and squashes? Are they high glycemic?
They are medium, I would say. They're not up there with
them.
White potatoes, but they're not down there with black beans.
Okay. All right. Good to know.
You can actually just Google, you know, glycemic index squash, glycemic index, you know, white potato, and it comes up really fast.
That's so cool to know.
Let's see. I just did glycemic index squash, and it says 51, which is actually pretty good. Butternut squash. Butternut squash is very low, which, let's see, is butternut squash okay? Yeah, so you have to look individually. Anything below 55 is actually going to raise your blood sugar level basically pretty slow.
Below 55. Okay, that's great to know. That's a good number to know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then, that's what I made last night, butternut squash with a little cinnamon. It was really good.
Yeah. So instant oatmeal is 80.
Ah, there
rice,
you go.
80. Mm. Yeah.
Ah, so you want to stay below 55, like as if you were driving on the freeway.
Yep.
Which never...
White bread. Yeah, there you go. There, perfect.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
White bread, 75. All breads are 70 or higher. Corn tortilla, 46.
Oh,
white rice, 70, 75. Brown rice, 73. Barley, 28, very low glycemic. Sweet corn, 60. spaghetti 60, rice noodles 60.
Fascinating. Wow.
Breakfast cereals, corn flakes 80.
Good. Wow. And now this is great. Now there's an entire online course. You're so awesome. Thank you so much. It's Dr. Jody Stanislaw, and her website is drjody, N as in Nancy, D as in doctor.com. drjodynd.com. Thank you so much for making this so accessible with tons of information for our type 1 diabetics, and we appreciate you. Thanks, Dr. Jody.
Thank you, Lisa.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Take care. All right. And that is it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me. And thank you so much to Gina Salvati, the incredible executive producer of The Aware Show, Joyce Walker, producer of The Aware Show, and our wonderful engineers here at KAPFK and WBAI. I am Lisa Garr. And until next time, I invite you to stay aware.